Hello, welcome to The Fat Lip, the podcast for fat people about fat people. I'm your fat host, Ash, and I'm going to do something a little different today, something that it never really occurred to me to do before. We are almost 3 years into The Fat Lip. We have going on 60 episodes. I believe this one will be 58. We'll see. but close to 60, and someone suggested the other day that I do an introduction to me episode. And when this person said that, I was like, well, duh, I should have done that a long time ago. And if you've been listening to, I'm sorry, I have a little bit of a stuffy nose, so you might be hearing that, but if you've been listening to the pod for a while, over the last 3 years, you probably have gathered, you know, bits and pieces about me. Sometimes I talk more about myself than others. But this person, when they suggested this, said that they didn't really know about my background story or, you know, what I even do and what I'm actually like in my real life. And yeah, I never really thought about doing something like that. So, and I also feel a little uncomfortable doing it because it feels a little self-indulgent. But we're just going to go with it and see how it goes. So this person specifically asked for like an origin story. Oh, and another thing I want to say is when I do this kind of introduction to me or reintroduction to me, I'm going to try to not focus on fatness. Because as you know, in 2019, my goal is to try and take some of the focus away from fatness and take the rest of a fat person's life, make that the focus of the conversations we have. And fatness, of course, is a factor in, you know, my life, the way I grew up and, you know, why I do what I do. But it's not everything. And it's not even most things, you know? It's just a part of me. It's not, it oftentimes doesn't affect a zillion other things going on in my life. So I'm going to avoid the topic of fatness today. And I'm not going to give you like any sad stories about diets or anything like that, because we've all heard those stories a billion times. And this, it's not, that's not everything that I am. So I'm going to talk about origin story, but I'm going to avoid, you know, unless it's, you know, pertinent to what I'm talking about. I don't want to make fatness a character in this story. Like I am the story. Fatness is just a part of it, you know? So, origin story. So I grew up in rural Indiana, Northern Indiana, in a very small town. I grew up mostly on a horse farm, which belonged to my grandparents, my mom's parents. And my parents, I mean, my grandparents were our legal guardian, me and my two brothers, our legal guardians. And because my mom, my father was out of the picture and my mom had a bazillion other things going on in her life and she worked a lot. And so for the most part, we lived with my grandparents on the farm, and it was a horse farm. Did I say that already? It was a horse farm. And where, you know, the function of the farm was to breed and sell Arabian horses. So I grew up with horses. And I was a horse girl a little bit. I wasn't like, you know, that. I was in 4-H and stuff like that a couple of years. I do have a really goofy picture. I should put it up on the show notes. I have a really good goofy picture of me like in sixth grade showing a horse, and I have like I have like a teal patterned, like teal and pink patterned Western shirt because it was the 90s, and of course teal was the color, and I'm wearing like teal jeans that are for sure JCPenney Arizona Plus, you know, and I'm wearing a cowboy hat, and my hair is short and permed, so I look like a chubby little poodle. And so, yeah, I was in 4-H. I was interested in horses, but it wasn't like, you know, horse girls, that whole archetype wasn't really that far, wasn't really that deep. But I did enjoy the horses, and that was my life. It was a really cool way to grow up. And our neighbors across the street had three girls also. And so they were my best friends, and they were into horses also. So, you know, that was my life. I got to have horses, and none of them were mine, obviously. These were all horses that either were part of the breeding program or we were selling, you know. So I didn't own a horse, but I was around them. And it was a cool way to grow up. And we were outside all the time. We were not like a sit inside and watch TV family. We weren't a video game family when I was a kid. We were a go outside and play in the wood kind of a family. And it was cool. It was a cool way to grow up. And I was incredibly close with my grandmother. She was sort of the mom of the household, you know. She ran the show and made all the dinner. And my grandfather worked as a lineman for the electric company. So he had weird hours, long hours. And my grandmother took care of us, and we were really, really close, especially when I was in the teen years. And basically, I went with her for everything. We did everything together. And when I was a sophomore in high school, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and that was really awful. And I remember not really being able to wrap my mind around it when it happened. So she started chemo and radiation, and I remember she tried to make it as easy as possible on all of us. And so my grandparents had like 15-ish grandchildren at the time, and they had five kids of their own, and so there were a lot of us that were around the same age, cousins, and my grandmother tried to make it as easy as possible on all of us. And so she kind of made a joke of it when her hair was falling out. And I remember she like had all the grandkids come over on one Sunday. And we were supposed to shave her head, and none of us wanted to do it. I remember just standing, you know, against the wall crying. Eventually, you know, she talked people into doing it. But she was always like trying to make it as easy as possible on us. And, but it was really rough on her, especially the radiation. She ended up with these awful, awful burns all over her, chest and under her breasts and in her armpits. And it was just terrible. And yeah, it was really hard watching her go through that. But eventually she went into remission, and everything was going pretty well. And I went away to college. I ended up letting my family convince me to go to a all-girls Catholic college that was part of the Notre Dame University family of schools, and I hated every minute of it. I lived on campus, so I only went for a year because it was just terrible. And And I think my problem was most of the girls who went there came from wealthy families, and you know, like, they were very wrapped up in their appearance and guys, and it was just not me, and I didn't fit in, and I just hated it. And so the school was about an hour away from the farm, and my grandmother knew that I just hated it so much. So she would come up every weekend on Friday after I got done with class, or if I was working, she would come up after work and drive me back home to the farm. And I would spend the weekend. Actually, at this point, I wasn't living at the farm. So around junior high and high school, for a couple of years off and on, we lived with my mom. And so at this point, we were living in it. I was living in a different house on the weekends. So she would, my grandmother would come up on Friday night and pick me up, take me back home, and we would hang out and do whatever, go out to lunch. And she was just a funny lady, like, not, she was, you know, not like a proper grandmother. I could say anything to her. She could say anything to me. And like, her favorite thing was playing bingo. And so we would go play bingo, on Sunday night. And then she would take me back to school, and I would be miserable for the entire week. And often I would not go to class, and it was just, and of course I didn't tell her that, 'cause she would be so disappointed. But it was just really, a really rough year. But being able to go home on the weekends and all the effort that she put into coming and getting me, because she knew that I hated it, was like, it was the only reason I even got through that first year. But after that, I decided to leave that school, and everybody was pretty convinced that I was never going to go back to school after that, because that's sort of what happened, you know. But I was determined to prove them wrong. So I signed up to a commuter school, like a state school, that was still about an hour away. But instead of living away from home, I actually ended up driving my grandmother's car, because I didn't have a car. So I would drive, you know, every day to class, drive home, and then, my grandmother would just let me keep the car, because she knew that it was important and that I needed it, and so that I could get to class. And then I would come pick her up a couple of days a week, and we would go play bingo, or, you know, do her shopping or whatever she needed to do. And I would take her to appointments and stuff. And so that was for my second year of college. So, and she had been in remission all this time. And then when that summer, the summer I was 19, about to be 20, we had gone on vacation to North Carolina to see my mom's sister graduate from college. She went to college late in life, and so she was graduating. So me and my grandparents drove down from Indiana to North Carolina to see her graduate. And we spent a week, and we stayed in a house on the beach, and it was really a good time. But my grandmother was having some problems with her health at that point. She thought it was asthma. She was having some trouble breathing. And so as soon as we got home, like the very next day, she needed to go see her doctor, so I took her to the doctor, and we went in, and the doctor said, well, we need to get a chest x-ray and see what's going on, because at this point we just thought that it was her breathing, we just thought it was asthma, but he wanted to, you know, check it out and be sure. So we were in the hospital. So she was in a wheelchair, because she couldn't walk very far without having trouble breathing. So I pushed her down to radiology and helped her change and so that she could get her x-rays. And then we got her back in the chair and we were sitting in the waiting room. And we just ended up sitting there for so long. And she was impatient and, you know, she was very stubborn and she was just like, I just want to leave. Like, this is taking so long. When is somebody going to come tell me something? And at first they were saying, well, the radiologist has to read your films and then he's going to come out and talk to you. And then after that it was, well, your doctor's going to come down and talk to you. And we're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And it feels like, when I think back on it, feels like it was hours, but it was probably, you know, no more than an hour, hour and a half, something like that. But finally, her doctor came back down from his office. And like, I remember it so vividly because like, this is just going to be always etched in my mind probably, but this, you know, very serious doctor who had known her for years, she was in the wheelchair and he came in and he actually knelt down in front of her and said, Mick, her name was Madeline, but everybody called her Mick or Mickey. So he kneeled down and he said, Mick, your cancer's back and you've got to go tonight up to the big hospital and your oncologist is waiting for you. And she just looked so disappointed. And she, at this point, you know, I never really saw her get upset. I never really saw her get emotional, but I could just see in her face that she was just scared. And I was scared. But you know, when you hear scary news, sometimes you feel like you're having an out of body experience. Like, I just remember listening to this beside her and having that feeling where I was hearing it from the bottom of a well, you know, like you're hearing this news and the person's right next to you, but it sounds so far away. And, I think I was in a little bit of shock. And so then the doctor left and she's like, all right, well, we got to go. So I had to wheel her out to the car and there's like this big ramp. I remember this so clearly. There was this big ramp down from the hospital back to the parking lot where her car was. And so I'm pushing her so that she didn't have to walk back. And we get to this ramp and she's like, okay, well, we might as well, you know, have a good time. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, you got to push me and we got to go down this ramp. And she's like, I want to go fast. So I remember like trotting behind her, pushing her down this ramp and she was laughing. And it was just something that I never would have done. And she never would have done. She never, you know, she wasn't a daredevil. And, but it was just like in that moment, I think she just wanted me to be okay. So I got her in the car and, we went back to the farm and my grandfather wasn't home from work yet. So I started to get out of the car to go inside and she was like, I think I'm going to wait till your grandfather gets here so that we can just go straight up there and get this taken care of. So, I just waited in the car with her and my grandfather got home shortly after that. And, he kind of seemed confused that we were still sitting in the car. Because this was, of course, like before, you know. I mean, I think we had cell phones, but it wasn't really a thing, you know. So, he comes home and he gets out and he goes directly to her driver's door because he doesn't understand why she's still sitting there. And he opens the door and he kind of squats down and he asks her what's wrong. And, she started crying and she said, my cancer's back and we have to go to the hospital right now. And like I said, I'd never seen her emotional, really. And it was really scary. And then it really started to sink in. Like, suddenly I understood what was happening. So I didn't go with them to the big hospital. I went home and called my brother. My brother was away. My middle brother that I'm close with, he was in the Marine Corps, and so he was away. We had actually just seen him. He was stationed in North Carolina. So, you know, just a few days earlier, we had seen him. And I told him what happened. And as soon as I got off the phone, that's when I really lost it and just cried so hard. Like, I was just so scared because she was so scared. And like, when she was first diagnosed, the first time, I hadn't seen her that way. And I think she knew that something, that it was, this time it was really serious. And not that it wasn't serious before, but I think she knew that because of her symptoms that this was not good. So she went into the hospital, and her cancer had come back and had metastasized and was all over her lungs and also under the skin at the top of her skull. She had had this sore spot on the top of her head, and her hair was white, like snow white. And so you could actually see through the skin this red spot about the size of a quarter on the top of her head. And that was a cancerous mass. And so that night she went up to the hospital, and she never got to come home. She was there for 2 weeks, and she went in exactly a week before my 20th birthday. And the last time she spoke was on my 20th birthday. And she died a week after my 20th birthday. And was the it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And I did not think that I could live through it, honestly. Like, I did not think that I would survive that. Because, like, she was essentially my mom. And really my best friend. Like, I was 20 years old and my grandmother was my best friend. And, yeah. Her funeral, I don't think I've ever cried so hard in my entire life. Up to that point or since. And, it was just really terrible. And, I thought that I could not recover from that kind of pain. But I did. And like I said, that was, you know, the week after my 20th birthday. And I'm going to be 36 this year. So that was 16 years ago. And it's still just so, it still feels so raw. And I still dream about her, like, at least once a week. Like, she, and it's just like, she's just there, like, as if she's still around and, like, you know. And I think about her all the time, and I think about how much she would love Travis. Like, she would just love him. She and my grandfather had like a really funny, jokey relationship. They had been best friends since they were in fourth grade. And they grew up together and they did everything together. And so, you know, because they had that history, they were always just very goofy, and they would play pranks on each other, and it was just a funny relationship. And I see so much of that in my relationship with Travis. Like, we're just goofballs, and yeah, she would love him and she would be so happy for me. Ah, man. Did not expect to cry during this episode, but here we are. But yeah, so that's my, like, you know, the story that really shaped so much of my early adulthood, because I just felt like I just spent so many years just like trying to recover from just this massive loss, just massive loss. And it kind of informed how I feel about a lot of things, and just an essential part of why I am who I am and why I do the things that I do. So yeah, that was my grandmother. And I still wish that she was here. And I'm sure that she would have a lot to say about some of the things that I've done. She would not approve of a lot of things that I've done. But she would be supportive, I know for sure. So yeah. So Travis, so like, if you haven't really followed, you probably don't know the whole story with Travis, but Travis is my husband. We've been together almost 4 years, married for over, for about a year and 3 months now. We got married on New Year's Eve, 2017. Took me a second to think about that. And he's just the best thing that's ever happened to me, honestly. He's Canadian, so it's always been long distance. Well, not always. For the majority of the time, it's been long distance. I did go up there and live with him for about 10 months in 2016, 2017. And he's just the best. And right now we're working through the immigration system so that he can come here so that we can live together again. Because, you know, I guess most people know this like in the abstract, but don't really know the details. Obviously, if you're not an American citizen, you can't live legally in the U.S. unless you go through the proper legal immigration channels. And people always ask me, because we're doing this, we're going through, you know, the official legal channels for immigration, if I resent people that do it illegally, and I absolutely do not. And I think that the U.S. has created its illegal immigration problem by making such insane financial and bureaucratic barriers in the legal immigration process. So Travis and I didn't hire a lawyer, so we don't have that expense, but because we didn't hire a lawyer, we have had nobody to really guide us. And we've had to figure it out on our own. And it is incredibly difficult. The process is so complex, and the information is so disparate. Like, nothing, like, there's no, you know, beginning to end guide anywhere. You just sort of have to figure it out. And there are online resources that have been really helpful, but and you're really just piecing this whole process together. And I cannot even imagine having to do it if English were not my first language. It would be impossible. And so many people that whose first language is not English end up having to hire a lawyer, which is so expensive, an immigration attorney, so expensive. And that's before, you know, the actual immigration fees. And the, you know, without a lawyer, we've spent thousands of dollars just in the actual fees that we have to pay to the different agencies that process the immigration application. And it's a huge barrier for poor people and people who don't speak English as a first language to be able to follow the legal channels to immigrate to the US. And I think that we've created that those barriers because essentially we're racist. And I think that we've, as a country, we've purposely set it up that way so that we can weed out people that are poor and brown, you know, and people that who's, you know, who don't speak English. And I think it's disgusting, honestly. And of course, I don't resent people that do it illegally because they're just trying to be with their loved ones just the same that I am. And Travis and I are lucky that we can afford to do it the legal way. And I think that, you know, we should be creating opportunities for people to immigrate to the U.S. that don't cost so much, that aren't so ridiculously complex. And but it doesn't seem like even the Democrats are willing to do that. But anyway, I'm going off the rails here. But that's the answer to that question that I often get asked, if I find it frustrating that people don't go through the process and still, you know, live with their loved ones because they've done it, you know, they've crossed illegally. And no, I don't. And yeah, so that's that. But thankfully, we're getting to the end of the process. We're in the final phase right now. And the final phase is a consulate interview. So Travis has his consulate interview at the end of March. And if all goes well, he will get a temporary green card at the end of that interview. And then he can start looking for jobs in the U.S. And then we can finally live together. And I'm very much looking forward to that. When we did live together for 10 months, it was always so, like, I was always just so anxious because the reason that we were able to do that is going between countries that have a no visa required agreement. Like, so there are certain countries where you don't have to have a visa to enter the US or to enter Canada because the governments of those two countries have an agreement, and it's called a visa waiver program. And so Canada and the US have that. So technically you can go to Canada and spend 6 months there without a visa. As long as you don't work or intend to immigrate, or as long as you don't, you know, you aren't actually living there. And you also, I obviously didn't have access to Canadian healthcare or anything like that. But so I went intending to stay for 6 months, but we ended up extending that by filing a petition to the Canadian Immigration Department. And we extended it to 10 because we were trying to figure out how to get this immigration thing going. And we weren't sure how that was going to happen, whether he was going to be able to get an employment visa or what was going to need to happen. We always knew that we were going to get married, but it was just a question of, you know, what are we going to do that before he moves to the US or after, or what's going to be the deal? And so this is the plan that we ended up taking. But after that 10 months, then I couldn't stay in Canada, obviously. That's against the law. And I couldn't work while I was there. So I needed to go. And I wanted to be as close as to him as possible. So I ended up moving to a border town, and that's where I live now. And this is actually the first time I've actually lived alone. Like, I've always had roommates or, you know, lived with a family member. This is the first time I've lived alone. And man, it is not, like, I always thought that I wanted to live alone, because I'm introverted and, you know, I like to, you know, have time to myself. But it is harder than I expected, living alone. But it's been fine. I'm very much looking forward to it being over, though. And not the least of all because, you know, I'm paying rent and Travis is paying rent. And I would like for us to not have to pay rent at two places anymore. So hopefully that will happen here soon, yet this spring. We'll see. So that's what we're working on. So anyway, this is getting very long. So let's talk more about me. Let's bring this back home. So about me, I am a woman of many hustles. I do various freelance things, graphic stuff, photo editing stuff, the podcast, essay scoring, etc. Tons of things. But most of that is, you know, arty, graphic-y, that kind of stuff. And I'm also a woman of many projects, many of side projects. Because I'm very curious. I'm a very curious person. And I want to try everything I see. And like, I've never believed in astrology or anything like that. I don't really know anything about astrology. I'm a Gemini, which the only thing I know about Geminis is that it seems to be like the most reviled of all the zodiac signs. And I've never really identified with the things that people say about Geminis until, however, I saw Megan Tonjes on her Instagram stories one night. I think she was doing like a roast my astrological sign thing, and someone responded Gemini, and she said, "You know, you're not good at everything." And that was the first time I was like, huh, maybe I am a Gemini. Because, like, I don't like tell people I'm good at everything, but in my mind, I always think that I'm going to be good at everything. Like, like, I'll see something and think, I could try that. Like, I want to try that. Like, oh, what's an example? Oh, so like, I was watching that Netflix show that I cannot remember the name of now that everybody was watching. The one about the family that lived in the haunted house. Fuck, what was that called? With a bent neck lady. Anyway, I was watching that. And at one point, the mom was like doing a blueprint of their dream house. And I immediately thought, ooh, I want to draw a blueprint. Like, I'm not an architect. Why would I think that I can do a blueprint? But in my mind, I'm convinced that, like, yeah, I could do that, you know? I just want to try a lot of things. Basically, everything I see, I'm like, I want to try that. And I think it's just because I'm curious about the world, but also because, you know, I'm convinced that I can be good at things, even though I probably can't. So it kind of leads me into like all kinds of weird projects, things that I just try for funsies. And so at any moment, you will find me working on a million projects. Currently, I'm working on, well, I'm always working on graphic design stuff, teaching myself new things. I really like logo design. That's kind of my favorite thing. But I also like doing posters and that kind of stuff. So I'm always working on that. I'm always working on art and illustration stuff. And I don't know. I just find like it's so fulfilling for me to do that kind of stuff, to just be working on a project just because. I'm also working right now on games. So a few years ago, when my best friend was getting married, she and her husband are like big board game people, and I wanted to get them a wedding gift. And another thing about me, and another probably part of my Gemini-ness, is that I like to give really, really good gifts that like people are really going to be touched by. And it's just so narcissistic to even feel that way. But so I was trying to think about a wedding gift for them that would just like be really good and that would be really meaningful and that they would really love. And I decided to make them a board game. And what I did was I sort of modeled it after the game Ticket to Ride. And I made like a map, but all of the landmarks on the map were places that were important to them, and you know, fictional and non-fictional places. So like their house, her mom's house, but also Hogwarts, like that kind of stuff. So when I got this idea to do this, this was before I had any illustrator skills, and I was like, well, how am I going to do this? Like, am I going to make it with construction paper and Sharpies? Like, how's this going to work? And obviously I'm a perfectionist, so that wasn't going to happen. So I decided to learn Adobe Illustrator so that I could, you know, make it happen. So I did. And so I made the game. It was really fun. I was super proud of it. They loved it. And then that was when my whole like Illustrator design stuff got started. And then the next year, our other friends were getting married, and they really love Monopoly. So I made them their own Monopoly game and filled it with like, you know, places that they'd gone together and experiences that they'd had together. And it was, instead of the Monopoly man, they have two little pugs. So I made little characters out of their little pugs and made them a Monopoly game. And it was so fun that like, I just love doing that stuff. So, I'm always, like if I could do anything in the world, it would be making games like that. Personalizing games for people. And like, so I'm always thinking about games that I want to do and for what occasion. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, I decided to make my own games, which is a thing that I'm still working on. So yeah, I'm always working on games, making games, designing games, that kind of stuff. I'm also obviously trying to keep all my paid work spinning in the air so that I can pay my rent. I also have been learning web development since last year. And that's more of like out of a feeling of wanting to make my graphic design skills more marketable by also knowing web design. So I'm working on that also slowly. Slowly. And what else? I like to cook fun things. My grandmother was also a very, very good cook, so that's where that started. And I just really love cooking, and obviously I love eating good food. But it's hard to cook for just me. I really like cooking when Travis is here to enjoy it, or when I have friends over. But when it's just me at home, like, I'd just as soon eat a grilled cheese, because it's just not fun to cook for just yourself, or just for me anyway. But I do enjoy cooking. What else? I'm learning ukulele right now for no reason, just because it's relaxing. And I'm making some progress. I actually had a ukulele a few years ago and I learned some things then. But I'm further along now than I was then and enjoying it. Definitely enjoying it. What else am I working on? I'm anxious about everything. I'm always constantly anxious about everything that's going on in front of me and things that I'm anticipating in the future. And also I'm working on always feeling like an imposter with the podcast and fat liberation and everything else in my life. But it's things that I'm working on. Okay. So before I end this, I wanted to say something about Infinite Fashion February because we are now at the end of February and Infinite Fashion February is hard and it was hard last year. It was harder this year. And I think, well, to begin with, at the beginning of the month. So Infinite Fashion February, I talked about this earlier in the month when I did the initial episode for Infinite Fashion February, but the whole thing started as an answer to Fashion February, which was a month where plus size people on Instagram were posting an outfit of the day every day for the month of February. And I just didn't see anybody who was my size. And I was frustrated that I couldn't participate or didn't feel like I could participate because all of these people were posting these beautiful outfits, like very stylish outfits. And I just felt like the clothes weren't the kind of clothes that I wanted to wear weren't available to me. So I didn't feel like I could participate. And then because I was feeling very stubborn and snarky, I decided, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And like, just show, like bring attention to the fact that there aren't clothes in my size. So Infinite Fashion February was an answer to Fashion February. However, this year at the beginning of Infinite Fashion February, before it started, I did think, oh, February is Black History Month. Maybe I shouldn't do this during Infinite Fashion February. Maybe I shouldn't do this during Black History Month. But I kind of justified it to myself in my head and said, well, you know, I'm a 600-pound person. I don't have any power. I'm obviously, you know, me and a few women or people, not necessarily women, posting outfits of the day for a month isn't going to take any attention away from Black History Month. And so I sort of justified it to myself in my head. And I was wrong about that. Like I should have really considered the way even a little bit of attention being taken away from Black History Month was too much. And so I really regret not listening to myself at the beginning and not moving it or doing something different. Because there's just, like, honestly, it's just not necessary for it to be during February. There's absolutely no reason that it should be in February. And Black History Month has been going on for decades. And of course, it should have its month. You know, of course, Black History Month should have the entire month of February to itself. And there's just no reason for me to have it in February. It's just none, other than like, I guess, I mean, obviously, I don't know the person that invented Fatch in February, but I guess my guess is that they only chose February because of alliteration. And that's just not good enough reason to keep it, you know, taking up space in Black History Month. So going forward, Infinite Fashion February will not be in February. Infinite Fashion anything will not be in February going forward. So I determined that early on this month. However, as the month went on, it's just hard. It's hard to post a photo every day, especially when, you know, the representation of Infinite Fat people on Instagram is so low. I think in total, we probably had 10 or 12 people participating all month. And that's just because, well, it's because One, it's like a small little movement, you know. I'm obviously no big deal on Instagram. But also because there just aren't that many InfiniFat people who are comfortable being visible on Instagram. Because there's so many trolls. There's so many. And it's either trolls or creeps. And people of all sizes get those. But when you already feel so vulnerable in your body, even inside the fat community, because the fat community is very robust right now, especially on social media, and it's very supportive. However, when you only see people who are significantly smaller than you, you still don't feel like you have a place there or that it's safe for you there. And to have those feelings and then also like be getting the trolls and the creeps, it's just a lot. It's just a lot to deal with. And to do it every day for an entire month it's too much. And it's even too much for me. And I definitely missed several days this month. And there were people that started participating and then couldn't finish it because it was just too much for them also. So what I'm saying is I don't think InfiniFatchin month is going to be a month any longer. What I was thinking about doing maybe is, so I thought maybe do like a week, you know, 1 week out of a year. But I still think even then that's maybe pushing it. So I was thinking about maybe doing a day a week, like a certain day every week, and having it be like InfiniFatchin Friday or something like that. And my only reservation with that is that Fat Is Not a Violation is also on Friday. So maybe it can be another day. I don't know. But so that's what I'm thinking about doing going forward. I think for the next month or so, I should just take a break. I never remember how much work it is to manage social media every day for an entire month. Like, it's just so much work and it just takes hours and hours out of my day. And I'm just not set up financially to be able to allow that to happen. Like, I don't make any money off of my social media presence. $0 off of my social media presence. So it's hard to justify devoting that much time to it every day for an entire month. So maybe it can be one day a week. I don't know. Something that I'm still thinking about. I'm going to take this to Instagram to talk about it and kind of see what people's opinions are. But that's what I'm thinking about doing. But in any case, InfiniFatchin February will never be in February again. And that's because Black History Month is the most important part of February, and it should always be at the beginning, at the forefront of every conversation that we are having about social justice movements in February. So that's the plan going forward, for to never be in February again. And I don't know if people are still doing Fatch in February, but I hope that they consider moving that as well, because there's just no need for it to be in February. So why even put ourselves in the way and take up space when we don't need to? Okay, so this was a very long episode. I never do 1 hour episodes, and this was one was entirely about me. But yeah, I hope that gave you some insight into me, the kind of person, the kind of things that I do and where I came from and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think that's it. If you have other questions that I didn't answer in this pod and you would like answers to, you can reach out to me by emailing me, ash@thefatlip.com, or on social media. You can usually find me there. If I'm not following you, though, and you get sifted into my other folder, sometimes I just miss those for weeks and months at a time. And I apologize for that, because it's just, they get lost, especially right now when I'm posting a lot. So I'm getting a lot of messages It's just something that I just can't keep up with. So usually email's the best way. And if you email me something that's important and I don't get back to you, email me again in a few more days because I might not have seen it or whatever. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed today's episode and that you'll come back and listen again in a couple of weeks for the next one. Again, I'm going to be posting on Instagram a subject and asking for people who might like to come on the pod to talk about that subject. So hang out, listen for those, and I hope you come on the show. Okay. Before we go, I need to talk about Big Fig. As you guys know, I love my Big Fig mattress. Big Fig is the first mattress company that made a bed specifically for fat people. And it's so comfortable and so sturdy. It's the best thing that ever happened to my sleep life. If you would like to hear more and learn more about the Big Fig mattress, go to bigfigmattress.com and use the promo code FATLIP at checkout for $100 off of your purchase and to let them know that I sent you. And this is a good thing because then it shows advertisers that it's worth advertising on the Fat Lip, and that helps me out. So if you're interested in doing that, please do. Thank you to Star Crusher for the music you heard on today's episode and the music you're hearing right now. Hear more at cstarcrusher.bandcamp.com. Thank you, as always, to our Patreon patrons. The patron of the day is Amanda. Thank you, Amanda, for your support. It means the world to me. If you would like to become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/thefatlip to find out how. You can support the show for as little as $1 an episode or $2 a month, and it's all super helpful. So if you have a couple bucks to throw my way every month, I would super appreciate it. It's what keeps the lights on around here. And don't forget to follow on social media. I'm most active on Instagram. You can find me at instagram.com/thefatlip. And the rest of my social media handles can be found at the top of thefatlip.com. Okay, I think it's all I got for today. And my furnace just turned on and it's very loud because I forgot to turn it off. So that's all I have. And I will see you again next time. Bye-bye.